I said, and drew it from under my cloak. It was a common cook's knife with a span or so of blade.
It looks sharp.
It is, I said. I know how to treat an edge, and I sharpened it carefully. That was the last thing I said to her. I put the knife into her right hand and went out. For a time, I knew her will would hold it back. A thousand times, one thought recurred. I could re-enter her cell, take back the knife, and no one would know. I would be able to live out my life in the guild. If her throat rattled, I did not hear it. But after I had stared at the door of her cell for a long while, a little crimson rivulet crept from under it. I went to Master Gerlow's then, and told him what I had done. Chapter 13. The Lictor of Thrax. For the next 10 days, I lived the life of a client, in a cell at the topmost level, not far, in fact, from that which had been Thekla's. In order that the guild should not be accused of having detained me without legal process, the door was left unlocked, but there were 2 journeymen with swords outside my door, and I never stepped from it save for a brief time on the 2nd day when I was brought to Master Palamon to tell my story again. That was my trial, if you like. For the remainder of the time, the guild pondered my sentence. It is said that it is the peculiar quality of time to conserve fact, and that it does so by rendering our past falsehoods true. So it was with me. I had lied in saying that I loved the guild, that I desired nothing but to remain in its embrace. Now I found those lies become truths. The life of a journeyman, and even that of an apprentice, seemed infinitely attractive, not only because I was certain I was to die, but truly attractive in themselves because I had lost them. I saw the brothers now from the viewpoint of a client, and so I saw them as powerful, the active principles of an inimical and nearly perfect machine. Knowing that my case was hopeless, I learned in my own person what Master Malrubius had once impressed on me when I was a child, that hope is a psychological mechanism unaffected by external realities. I was young and adequately fed. I was permitted to sleep, and therefore I hoped. Again and again, waking and sleeping, I dreamed that just as I was to die, Vodalus would come. Not alone, as I had seen him fight in the necropolis, but at the head of an army that would sweep the decay of centuries away and make us once more the masters of the stars. Often I thought to hear tread of that army ringing in the corridors. Sometimes I carried my candle to the little slot in the door because I thought I had seen the face of Vodalus outside in the dark. As I have said, I supposed I would be killed. The question that occupied my mind most during those slow days was that of means. I had learned all the arts of the torturer. Now I thought of them, sometimes one by one, as we had been taught them, sometimes all together in a revelation of pain. To live day after day in a cell below ground, thinking of torment, is torment itself. On the 11th day, I was summoned by Master Palamon. I saw the red light of the sun again and breathed that wet wind that tells in winter that spring has almost come. But oh, how much it cost me to walk past the open tower door and looking out, see the corpse door and the curtain wall, and old brother Porter lounging there. Master Palamon's study seemed very large when I entered it, and yet very precious to me, as though the dusty books and papers were my own. He asked me to sit. He was not masked and seemed older than I remembered him.
"We have discussed your case," he said, "Master Gerlows and I. We have had to take the other journeymen into our confidence, and even the apprentices. It is better that they know the truth. Most agree that you are deserving of death."
He waited for me to comment, but I did not.
"And yet there was much said in your defense. Several of the journeymen urged in private meetings, to me and to Master Gerlows as well, that you be permitted to die without pain."
I cannot say why, but it became of central importance to me to know how many of these friends I had. And I asked.
"More than 2, and more than 3. The exact number does not matter. Do you not believe that you deserve to die painfully?"
"By the revolutionary," I said, hoping that if I asked that death as a favor, it would not be granted.
"Yes, that would be fitting. But
And here he paused. The moment passed, then two. The first brass-backed fly of the new summer buzzed against the port. I wanted to crush it, to catch and release it, to shout at Master Palamon to speak, to flee from the room, but I could do none of these things. I sat instead in the old wooden chair beside his table, feeling that I was already dead, but still must die.
We cannot kill you, you see. I have had a most difficult time convincing Gerlows of that, yet it is so. If we slay you without judicial order, we are no better than you. You have been false to us, but we will have been false to the law. Furthermore, we would be putting the guild in jeopardy forever. An inquisitor would call it murder.
He waited for me to comment, and I said, "But for what I have done,
the sentence would be just, yes. Still, we have no right in law to take life on our own authority. Those who have that right are properly jealous of it. If we were to go to them, the verdict would be sure. But were we to go, the repute of the guild would be publicly and irrevocably stained. Much of the trust now reposed in us would be gone, and permanently. We might confidently expect our affairs to be supervised by others in the future. Would you enjoy seeing our clients guarded by soldiers, Severian?"
The vision I had in Gile, when I had so nearly drowned, arose before me, and it possessed, as it had then, a sullen yet strong attraction. "I would rather take my own life," I said. "I will feign to swim and die in mid-channel, far from help." The shadow of a sour smile crossed Master Palamon's ruined face.
"I am glad you made that offer only to me. Master Gerlows would have taken far too much pleasure in pointing out that at least a month must pass before swimming can be made credible."
"I am sincere. I sought a painless death, but it was death I sought, and not an extension of life."
"Even if it were midsummer, what you propose could not be permitted. An inquisitor might still conclude that we contrived your death. Fortunately for you, we have agreed upon a less incriminating solution. Do you know anything of the condition of our mystery in the provincial towns?"
I shook my head.
"It is but low. Nowhere but in Nessus, nowhere but here in the Citadel, is there a chapter of our guild. Lesser places have no more than a carnifex, who takes life and performs such excruciations as the judicators there decree. Such a man is universally hated and feared. Do you understand?"
"Such a position," I answered, "is too high for me."
There was no falsehood in what I said. I despised myself at that moment far more than I did the guild. Since then I have recalled those words often, though they were but my own, and they have been a comfort to me in many troubles.
"There is a town called Thrax, the city of windowless rooms,"
Master Palamon continued.
"The Archon there, his name is Abdesus, has written the House Absolute. A marshal there has transmitted the letter to the Castellar, and from him I have it. They are in sore need in Thrax of the functionary I have described. In the past they have pardoned condemned men on the condition that they accept the post. Now the countryside is rotten with treachery, and since the position entails a certain degree of trust, they are reluctant to do so again."
I said, "I understand."
"Twice before, members of the guild have been dispatched to outlying towns, though whether those were such cases as this, the chronicles do not say. Nevertheless, they furnish a precedent now, and an escape from the maze. You are to go to Thrax, Severian. I have prepared a letter that will introduce you to the Archon and his magistrates. It describes you as highly skilled in our mystery. For such a place, it will not be a falsehood."
I nodded, being already resigned to what I was to do. Yet while I sat there, maintaining the expressionless face of a journeyman whose only will is to obey, a new shame burned in me. Though it was not so hot as the one for the disgrace I had brought upon the guild, still it was fresher, and hurt the more because I had not yet grown accustomed to the sickness of it as I had the other. It was this: that I was glad to go, that my feet already longed for the feel of grass, my eyes for strange sights, my lungs for the new clear air of far, unmanned places. I asked Mr. Palamon where the town of Thrax might be.
"Down Jaiol," he said, "near the sea."
Then he stopped, as old men will, and said,
"No, no. What am I thinking of? Up Jaiol, of course."
And for me, hundreds of leagues of marching waves into the sand and the seabirds crying all faded away. Master Palamon took a map from his cabinet and unrolled it for me, bending over it until the lens by which he saw such things nearly touched the parchment.
"There,"
he said, and showed me a dot on the margin of the young river at the lower cataracts.
"If you had funds, you might travel by boat. As it is, you must walk."
"I understand," I said, and though I remembered the thin piece of gold Vodalus had given me, safe in its hiding place, I knew I could not take advantage of whatever wealth it might represent. It was the guild's will to cast me out with no more money than a young journeyman might be expected to possess, and for prudence's sake as well as honor's, so I must go. Yet I knew it was unfair. If I had not glimpsed the woman with the heart-shaped face and earned that small gold coin, it is more than possible I would never have carried the knife to Thekla and forfeited my place in the guild. In a sense, that coin had bought my life. Very well. I would leave my old life behind me.
"Severian,"
Master Palamon exclaimed,
"you are not listening to me. You were never an inattentive pupil in our classes."
"I'm sorry. I was thinking about a great many things."
"No doubt."
For the first time he really smiled, and for an instant looked his old self, the Master Palamon of my boyhood.
"Yet I was giving you such good advice for your journey. Now you must do without it. But doubtless you would have forgotten everything anyway. You know of the roads?"
"I know they must not be used. Nothing more."
"The Autarch Maruthus closed them. That was when I was your age. Travel encouraged sedition, and he wished goods to enter and leave the city by the river, where they might be easily taxed. The law has remained in force since, and there is a redoubt, so I've heard, every 50 leagues. Still the roads remain. Though they are in poor repair, it is said some use them by night."
"I see," I said. "Closed or not, the roads might make for an easier passage than traveling across the countryside, as the law demanded."
"I doubt you do. I mean to warn you against them. They are patrolled by Eulens under orders to kill anyone found upon them, and since they have permission to loot the bodies of those they slay, they are not much inclined to ask excuses."
"I understand," I told him, and in private wondered how he came to know so much of travel.
"Good. The day is half spent now. If you like, you may sleep here tonight and depart in the morning."
"Sleep in my cell, you mean?" He nodded. Though I knew he could scarcely see my face, I felt that something in him was studying me. "I will leave now, then." I tried to think of what I would have to do before I turned my back on our tower forever. Nothing came to me, yet it seemed there must surely be something. "May I have a watch in which to prepare? When the time is up, I will go."
"That's easily granted. But before you leave, I want you to return here. I have something to give you. Will you do it?"
"Of course, Master, if you want me to."
"And, Severian, be careful. There are many in the guild who are your friends, who wish this had never happened. But there are others who feel you have betrayed our trust and deserve agony and death."
"Thank you, Master," I said. "The second group is correct." My few possessions were already in my cell. I bundled them together and found the whole bundle so small I could put it in the saber tash hanging from my belt. Moved by love and regret for what had been, I went to Thekla's cell. It was empty still. Her blood had been scrubbed from the floor, but a wide, dark spot of blood rust had etched the metal. Her clothing was gone and her cosmetics. The 4 books I had carried to her a year before remained, stacked with others on the little table. I could not resist the temptation to take one. There were so many in the library that they would never miss a single volume. My hand had stretched forth before I realized I did not know which to choose. The Book of Heraldry was the most beautiful, but it was too large by far to carry about the country. The book of theology was the smallest of all, but the brown book was hardly larger. In the end, it was that I took, with its tales from vanished worlds. I climbed the stair of our tower then, past the storeroom to the gunroom where the siege pieces lounged in cradles of pure force. Then higher still to the room of the glass roof, with its gray screens and strangely contorted chairs, and up a slender ladder until I stood on the slippery panes themselves, where my presence scattered blackbirds across the sky like flecks of soot, and our fuligin pennons streamed and snapped from the staff over my head. Below me, the old yard seemed small and even cramped, but infinitely comfortable and homey. The breach in the curtain wall was greater than I had ever realized, though to either side of it, the Red Tower and the Bear Tower still stood proud and strong. Nearest our own, the Witch's Tower was slender, dark and tall. For a moment, the wind blew a snatch of their wild laughter to me, and I felt the old fear, though we of the torturers have always been on the most friendly terms with the witches, our sisters. Beyond the wall, the great necropolis rolled down the long slope toward Jaiol, whose waters I could glimpse between the half-rotted buildings on its banks. Across the flood of the river, the rounded dome of the Khan seemed no more than a pebble, the city about it an expanse of many-colored sand trodden by the master torturers of old. I saw a caique, with high, sharp prow and stern, and a bellying sail making south with the dark current, and against my will I followed it for a time, to the delta and the swamps, and at last to the flashing sea, where that great beast Abaya, carried from the farther shores of the universe in antiglacial days, wallows until the moment comes for him and his kind to devour the continents. Then I abandoned all thoughts of the south and her ice-choked sea and turned north to the mountains and the rising of the river. For a long time, I do not know how long, though the sun seemed in a new place when I took notice of its position again, I looked to the north. The mountains I could see with my mind's eye, but not with the bodies, only the rolling expanse of the city with its million roofs. And to tell the truth,